The purpose of the meeting is to get a briefing from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition on the annual performance plans 2023-2024, as well as the budget. As you know, that we are supposed to have met with the department 2 weeks ago, but due to the absence of the executive, the meeting was then cancelled, and then we rescheduled it for today, for this morning. Without wasting any time, let me hand over then to the Deputy Minister, Majola. Over to you, DM.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, thanks very much, Chairperson, and good morning. Firstly, good morning to you and welcome back. Happy to have you back. Honorable members and officials from the, both the Parliament and Department. Honorable Chairperson, in fact, I'm sitting somewhere in Jacobsfontein. We've already started the meeting of the Deputy President that asked that we should join the meeting now between 10 and 10:30 before the minister gets here. I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but we hope for your understanding. So I think maybe share with your permission, we should just go straight. The acting director general is here, is going to lead the presentation. So I would like, with your permission, that we give over to her. And I will not leave until the minister joins the committee.
Thank you so much, Honorable Dear. Ms. Mabija Thompson, over to you.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members. Chair will be taking the committee through the annual performance plan in terms of our presentation. I'll just ask Solo if she could just kindly share, and while she's doing that, I will introduce the DTIC team. Of course, the DM is here, DM Majola, and the minister will be joining shortly. I am joined by a number of DDGs here. I'll just quickly go through the names. Our chief economist, Stephen Hannibal, our head of incentives, Susan Mangole, our head of operations, Nontombi Madomela, our head of strategy, Wongi Masbangise, our CD responsible for trade, Elizabeth van Rienen, our DDG responsible for internal administration in the department, Sarah Chwani, DDG responsible for regulations, Dr. Evelyn Masoja, our DDG responsible for exports, Ms. Lerato Mataboge, and our acting CFO, Irene Ramafola, and I also understand that Mpo from the CFO's office is also on the line. Ms. Liesel Reinecke, currently assisting in the trade branch. Dr. Nimrod Zalk, who's heading our sector work, and Mr. Sadiq Jaffa, who's also here on behalf of Yunus Hussein, who heads the investment and special industrial development, and then Ms. Tanya van Mierlis, who's responsible for transformation and economy and competition. So as the chair and members can see, we are a full house, wanting to ensure that we give the committee as much information as possible, and all of us as a team also hear firsthand some of the concerns that the committee may want to bring across. Chair, in terms of the outline, the report covers the annual performance plan of the department for the period 2023-2024, and we've organized the presentation into 10 sections. The first one will just deal with introduction and context, and then we will go into a reimagined industrial policy and strategy, the role and evolution of our APP, our annual performance plan, over time. We'll look at the core outputs that have now been included in this APP as new core outputs. We'll look at all outputs which are part of this new APP. We will look at our implementation plan, look at cross-cutting issues, including gender and spatial interventions. APP and the DTIC group look at risks, assumptions, and partnerships that we know will be necessary for us to implement the APP. And then, of course, just a short look at our own financial resources to do the work. So in terms of the context, Chairperson, I'll move straight to that slide. So thank you. Our APP is responding to a number of issues. First and foremost, we are mindful that the energy challenge has a serious effect on the whole of the economy. And it is important that we adjust our plans to also see what it is that the DTIC can do to help in the resolution of the energy challenge. Then, of course, we are responding to a rather sluggish economy, and an economy that needs to create jobs and do so quite urgently. We're responding to a global economic context that's characterized by slow global growth, but we are also looking at some of the opportunities that may arise from some of the green shoots, including the African trade and also new sectors that the DTIC is envisaging to go into. We're doing this in the context of big shifts. Big geopolitical shifts, and of course, technology shifts, and what has now become a concern for many here at home and in the global arena in terms of climate change. So the totality of these is what our APP is seeking to respond to. Then the number of platforms that we are using in order to respond to the challenges as I've set them out. I did indicate that we will look at our industrial policy with this accompanying strategy. And here what we are communicating to the committee is that South Africa has an industrial policy, an industrial strategy, and that industrial strategy is geared towards promoting industrialization with higher levels of growth and investment. We want to overcome the core socio-economic challenges of deep levels of inequality and joblessness, and these changes all require disruptive and far-reaching structural changes in long-standing economic patterns. At the same time, the changes wrought by the pandemic, slower international trade growth, and heightened tensions among major economies are profoundly changing the context with which we are going to be required to implement this policy. What do we mean by industrial policy? Again, we are just reiterating some of the specific areas that we will be looking at. Here, when we refer to industrial policy, we're looking at efforts by the state to shape sectoral allocation. of the economy and promote a structural transformation by targeting specific industries, firms, and economic activities. And as you can see in the slide, we start indicating in which areas our focus is going to be in. This includes both firm focused measures and general efforts to improve economic performance. And in the area of infrastructure, our industrial policy focuses on shaping infrastructure and supply chain logistics to ensure that the output of emerging manufacturing industries can move cheaply and quickly between our own country and between the within our own country and between countries and from production centers to various markets. Innovation and R&D, as well as technology policies that deepen local technology base, especially by diffusing production and product innovation on a large scale and to address climate change concerns. This policy must look at education, skills, and help in increasing productivity by putting in place productivity policies that identify the best ways to empower workers and entrepreneurs. It looks also at competition policies that simultaneously improve market access and act against abuse of market power, not as aims in themselves, but as tools to promote employment and industrial capacity in the country. This policy also looks at a trade that integrates market, creates a critical mass and economies of scale while maintaining space for new industries to emerge specifically on a regional basis. Macro policies that ensure stability and competitive exchange rate, and financial policies that ensure access to finance at affordable terms, even by small and medium enterprises. And members would already see that we are looking at this industrial policy not just as an intervention of the Department of Trade and Industry, but an overall coordinating mechanism within government that helps us to push towards a similar goal. An industrial policy to address the economic structure the South African economy is quite critical. And what we are saying in this slide, Chairperson, is that research done by international and local agencies have pointed to the constraining effects of the economic structure on growth and its negative distributional effects. By structure, we refer in Telia to unusual large income and wealth disparities if you compare our own country with other partner countries, high levels of joblessness, low savings and high consumption levels, the associated high levels of economic concentration in product markets with a weak small and medium business sector, a trade structure that still relies on significant export of raw materials and importation of capital, high-valued and consumer products, a high carbon intensive economy, and an over-reliance on a few geographic areas as market areas for our own locally produced products. Now, changing industrial policy, which is on slide 7, here we're saying changes to domestic needs and international shocks. There are four areas there, which just shows how our own interventions have changed and grown over time from the COVID pandemic and supply chain disruptions. Extraordinary fluctuations in export markets growing geopolitical tensions, as I indicated earlier, persistent and deepening challenges facing the national grid. So the reimagined industrial strategy aimed to focus more clearly on strategic value chains, including promoting localization and sector master plans, ensuring that more South Africans benefit directly from industrialization and processes that are related to industrialization through job creation and the more broad-based ownership of businesses, promoting the legal and other modalities required to increase trade within Africa through the AFCFTA or the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. This industrial policy really is part of a number of interventions that had been put in place, and that includes the National Development Plan, the New Growth Path, Industrial Policy Action Plans, and Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan. Expanded aspects that we had set out in prior years in three areas. The DTIC had indicated important statements that lifted out the important areas of work that we believe are going to be key in order for us to deal with some of the challenges in the economy. The first one is the localization for jobs and industrial growth, trade policy for industrial development and employment growth, and the competition policy for jobs and industrial development. And all these statements were issued in May 2021, and the work of the department has really morphed in order to ensure that these areas are prioritized. The aim of the industrial policy, and we would see that some of these aims were already now filtering through into our own planning processes on how we arrange work within the department. So in 2022, the DTIC introduced three apex outcomes to consolidate the efforts of all programs within the department and all entities of the DTIC group. These apex outcomes are industrialization. Here, the aim is to promote job creation and raising incomes. It's transformation to build a more inclusive economy. Members are fully aware of the state of inequality in our country, and therefore the importance of us looking at industrialization as an important pillar to push transformation as well in the work that we do. A capable state to ensure improved impact of public policies. Their introduction, the introduction of these three big outcomes was aimed at introducing a focus, improving coordination, aligning resources, and increasing implementation efficiencies in the department. And these three outcomes were really the three core themes that were that characterized our APP for the year 2022-2023. The pillars to support these three outcomes, there were three apex outcomes, which had seven and six underlying pillars that reflected the core aims of our reimagined industrial strategy. One was to combine growth with transformation. And again, the important point that we have to keep making, that we don't have to choose between the two, that we can grow in a way that helps transform and include more people in the manufacturing and related services of the economy. Number two was to boost local production. And here, that is the reason why you would hear us talking more and more about the need, particularly of companies here in South Africa, to buy more from products that are produced in South Africa, for the government to also buy more of goods that are produced here, because that's about the only way that we can boost local production initially. And then, of course, the important area that is captured in number three, that is the work that we need to do to grow exports and expand African trade. Then we also focused on increasing investment, and then we focused also on establishing a more reliable and low-cost energy system while greening the overall economy. And then the last area of focus was to grow employment. The details of each of these are now set out in this new APP, and from policy to strategy in the next slide. And here we are just indicating to the committee some of the work that is moving from paper, and really informing how the work of the DTIC is carried out, and how we are working within government to have an alignment that helps us to grow our own industrial capability in the country. So the first one is building industrial resilience and competitiveness through workplace level support for structural transformation. We're developing partnerships that are based on mutual commitment from business, labor, and government. And these are set out in master plans or social compact. And members would know that we already have around 7 master plans that we are implementing. We are applying competition policies to address some of the structural constraints to growth, including through measures by the competition authorities to enhance SMME participation and new entrants in markets. Utilizing trade policies directed to growing the industrial base with an evidence-led approach. And then what this means is that where we're looking at a policy instrument, irrespective of who is asking for intervention, the most important thing we would be focusing on is how do this intervention help us to grow the industrial base so that we can grow jobs right here in South Africa. We can grow our capability, manufacturing capability right here, and our manufactured inputs. So accessing markets through preferential trade agreements, particularly where there's industrial complementarities, pivoting to the Africa-led trade and investment through the AFCFTA, promoting economic inclusion and transformation in the economy. And we've done this through measures to promote a wider pool of industrialists, bringing in more Black industrialists in order to make sure that even that talent pool is mobilized, brought in, so that they can be a source of jobs, a source of innovation, and a source of industrial development in addition to the capability that is already in place. A deeper shareholding through worker ownership schemes and broader skill space, promoting greater levels of innovation and technological development by linking research with commercialization strategies, greater levels of local procurement by the state and major firms, coupled with supplier development initiatives, identifying and backing new sources of growth, be it in the digital economy, in the green sector, while retaining employment in traditional sectors, and adjusting strategy to contemporary pressures, including implementation of measures to deal with energy or local or our logistical challenges. So the aim of our industrial policy, the South African Reimagined Industrial Policy, it seeks to deepen domestic market by growing employment, increasing productivity, and undertaking other measures to improve equity, and income distribution, and to widen the market for South African products and services through stronger focus on exports to the region and other rapid growing economies. Members will hear that I am repeating the same points that I've made previously, again showing that what we have on paper, we are effectively taking forward. So the role and evolution of our APP, I've already spoken to this, that our APP has evolved in time, and the reason for that APP evolution was to ensure that we are able to respond to challenges, contemporary challenges that then present, and we do so in a more coordinated manner in a department as big as the DTIC. So in this slide, what we just show members is from the integration with between the two departments, the Department of Economic Development and the Department of Trade and Industry, we undertook the transition to a new combined department, bringing staff, mandates, and resources together. And that was the work that we did between 2019 and 2020. And then in 2020 to 2021, we then combined our APPs into the APP of the new department. We mainstreamed the strategic direction set out by the president in the inaugural State of the Nation address, and that direction was captured in the reimagined industrial strategy. In the year 2021-2022, we then introduced shared performance indicators across all programs of the department and the 18 agencies that form part of the DTIC group. And then what we are doing now in 2023, we then consolidated the approach, and then we introduced those three outcomes that I spoke to: industrialization, transformation, and building a capable state. The previous APPs targeted inputs and activities that would have a beneficial outcome and impact on jobs, industrial output, exports, and investment. This was done because many external factors driving the outcomes were really outside the influence and control of the DTIC group. The output was often in the form of reports, and it was a criticism that members also raised, including at the time when we presented our APP. So some of the external factors, of course, included the global economic performance. I've spoken to that, the geopolitical developments, various wars and conflicts that affected markets of our own products and markets from where our own producers source inputs. Shock events like banking crisis, climate change events, floods and droughts, and we've had our own share of that, including that which happened in some parts of KZN and various other areas, including in some parts of the Eastern Cape, and then domestic external factors that we had to be mindful of: the energy availability, transport logistics, crime, and issues of lack of confidence and perceptions of that lack of confidence coming from our own entrepreneurs in South Africa. While these factors impacted on output and outcomes, a focus on inputs and activities can distort a resource allocation. And this is the point that we are making in this APP. So rather than those actions that can help to achieve key outcomes being the ones that are brought to the fore, we were focusing a lot more on processes that could help with achievement of key outputs. The limitation with that approach is that, of course, it limits our being held accountable on the impact of the use of public resources. So to address these concerns, a new high impact and outcome focused approach was developed, and this is the approach that we will be presenting to members in this financial year as our new APP. We have built on the progress that we've made since I indicated 2019 when the two departments merged, but a significant new element that has been added to our planning processes and now how we will be doing business is having meaningful outputs that more closely track the three outcomes to measure success of the work that we do. The new APP, the core outputs and targets, we've got 10 core targets that represent the real impact we aim to achieve in the economy and measure crucial indicators like local output, job creation, and performance of Black industrialists. While all our targets are important, these core targets are the apex priorities of the department, and all programs of the DTIC are expected to contribute to the achievement of this essential outputs. The outputs are set out there at the bottom of the slide. Number one, it's 200 billion in investment pledges secured across the state. We're setting ourselves a target of 40 billion in additional local output committed or achieved. We're setting ourselves a target of 700 billion in manufacturing exports. Setting ourselves a target in manufacturing exports to other African countries of 300 billion, 2.5 billion in exports of global business services to the rest of the world, 40 billion in Black industrialist output, 1 million jobs that are supported or covered by our master plans and various interventions of the department. 100,000 jobs to be created, including through our social economic fund that helps to maintain people in jobs, and also through various other training interventions, and then 23,000 jobs in Black industrialist firms. And here, like I indicated, the reason we had the Black industrialist program is that we need to mobilize Black producers in a more focused way to also contribute to the development and growth of the country. And now we set ourselves a jobs target for Black industrialist firms that we will be supporting or working with through our various interventions. Then 20,000 additional workers with shares in their companies. And here again, looking at transformation, not just being an exchange of equity, but also allowing those that are in the workplace to have more benefit than just a salary in being part of the workplace. And this is the target that we have set, where we want additional worker shares and additional workers that would have shares in companies where they work, an important part of transforming, including industrial relations in the way that our economy is structured. So the new APP, all output targets, these 10 core outputs are part of the 45 output and targets, which have been clustered into 12 functional areas. And you would see the theme there from the very beginning of our presentation coming together here, that the 12 functional areas include investment, industrial production, exports, industrial support, transformation, jobs, energy, green economy targets, stakeholder engagements and impacts, addressing crime, red tape and state capability targets, improving the capacity and responsiveness of the state, and social partnerships. So I'll turn now to outputs that relate to investment. Remember, I indicated to members that we are dealing with actually 45 outputs. So three of the 45 outputs deal directly with investment. The first one, I've already set it out, that we've set ourselves a target of 200 billion in investment pledges that would be secured across the state, 100 million facilitation, 100 investor facilitation and unblocking interventions that will provide where an investor is stuck. One of our key priorities is making sure that from when the investment decision is made to when there's brick and mortar jobs created, production rolling off the production line, that period is shortened as much as it is possible. So we do have an investor facilitation role and a responsibility within the department where we unblock any of challenges that could be brought in to temper with reducing that timeline between when an investment decision is made and when we actually see that investment on the ground. That's our output number 23. And then we've set ourselves a target that in this financial year, we will implement two new SEZs. Of course, this target is predicated on those SEZs being feasible in terms of the SEZs having investors. And of course, we are able to even look at the potential jobs that they can create. So this is not an output to create two more white elephants, as has been the criticism of our SEZ programs, where we had initially gone in designated and then went to look for investors. Our new approach is saying we will be investment-led. So where the investment is there and there's potential to grow more by bringing in the additionality of a special economic zone, we will move mountains to designate. So these are the two SEZs that we've now set ourselves a target. And then, of course, we want to continue the work that we do with provinces in relation to industrial parks. And then on output related to production and exports, first one on industrial production, we've got two outputs that are linked to that. 40 billion in additional local output committed or achieved. And here what we are just indicating is that the economy is not going to grow if we don't focus on the additionality in terms of the support that we provide and we're working with our partners in industry to increase the volume that they produce, to increase their own output, be it in the form of services, be it in the form of actual units that roll off a production line, but expansion of economic activity at a firm level is an important addition to growing our economy. And there we set ourselves at 40 billion. Again, we've set ourselves the target of what we will receive from Black industrialists in terms of additional output achieved, and then on exports, these are some of the targets I've already spoken to. The three additional ones there is output 27, 28, and 41. There is implementation of the AFCFTA. Members may wonder, why do we still put that as an output when all agreements by and large have been signed? We are in the process of finalizing the rules that link to trade actual operational rules to make the FCFTA work. And what we've set ourselves there as a target is that at least from a South Africa perspective, a SACU perspective, because we negotiate this as part of a customs union, we would push so that we are part of those countries that will implement the AFCFTA. Then 10 high impact trade interventions completed and 4 protocols finalized under the AFCFTA. So on industrial support again and transformation, further outputs, output number 6, 7, 8, 9, and 43 that are part of our APP, the support, that important outcome, 30 billion in support programs administered by or in partnership with the DTIC group. Members again here will say, we looked at your budget. You do not have 30 billion across the DTIC group, but what we are saying is part of the work that we need to do is to see how we can work more closely with the private sector to raise funds that can then be used to support industry beyond what the DTIC can do. And the localization fund that is being launched today is one such fund where, through a competition settlement, we've been able to raise funds that are now going to go and support a localization in companies that are here in South Africa, assisting them in various ways to be able to increase their output, increase jobs, increase their exports, and also then contribute to our economic growth. Output number 7 is 15 billion support programs to enterprises in areas outside the 15 main metros. And again here, we are challenging ourselves. We've said many times, and I think this committee is one of those committees that has challenged us on where our support goes. And now we've put it in our APP as a target that we will be going in terms of support to areas outside the main metro, looking at enterprises, entrepreneurial opportunities that we can support, which are sustainable, which can then help us in achieving the goals that we have set for ourselves. And we are setting 15 billion to do that work. Set 8 billion in financial support programs to SMMEs, to women-owned and women-empowered businesses. This is not to say that this is all that will go into SMMEs. This is to say this is only for SMMEs. So in the various other programs that we will be doing, we will still be ensuring that SMME support, including when it comes to market access, is prioritized. Then output number 9, 7.5 billion of in financial support to enterprises in labor absorbing sectors. I've already spoken about the importance of us prioritizing labor absorption in the work that we do. And in this financial year, we now have set ourselves a target in terms of the financial support that would go towards enterprises that are more labor absorbing. Promotion of a transparent and just adjudication process for incentive application. Like in many areas, where we provide a service to the public. Where there are problems and people are raising issues, we do need to find a way to have systems that quickly addresses the issues and does it in a transparent way, that people can feel that their matters were dealt with justly. So we are putting there as an additional output number 43, promotion of a transparent and a just adjudication process for incentive application, which is an output that we are bringing forth for our APP in this financial year. Then on transformation, three outputs, 100 million in equity equivalent investment program agreements that would be agreed and administered. The equity equivalent investment program is a program that is set aside in the BEE Act that allows particularly multinationals who are unable to diversify their equity by bringing in local players to set aside funds equivalent to the equity that they would have required to bring in order to transform their companies, and we use that program to then see how we can support more black particularly entrepreneurs in activities that would have been otherwise very difficult for them to enter into. And one of the focus areas there is providing concessional financing, because concessional financing is an important point for any new and a growing business. And it's a growth constraint that we want to ensure that as we are dealing with all these equity equivalent applications, we use this opportunity to address that, because there's not enough money in the state to help us have the reach that we know we need to have in order to deal with this issue. There's 20,000 additional workers with shares in their companies. I've already spoken to that. 10 high impact outcomes on addressing market concentration at sector or firm level. And here we are just bringing in a way, the might of our competition legislation to bear in helping us push transformation and ensure that market conduct is such that it helps particularly small firms to enter sectors that otherwise would have been closed without a competition policy that focuses on transformation. Then on jobs and energy, I've already indicated in terms of output number 12 that we are setting aside 1 million jobs that would be supported or covered by our master plan actions as a key target. And then we've got two more targets that focuses on jobs. The one, again, I've spoken to 100,000 jobs to be created, including through the Social Economy Fund. Some of this work will be part-time or even temporary job opportunities. And then 50,000 full-time jobs that we will be supporting. And then 23,000 jobs in black industrialist firms, which I've already spoken to. Sorry, Jay. My apologies for that. And then on energy, there are five outputs that the department has set itself. 1.3 billion, this is funding that comes from the department, which will be directed towards enterprises, including SMMEs, to mitigate the impact of load shedding through energy through an energy resilient fund. Then 14,000 megawatts of energy from projects that will be facilitated, be it in alternative energy sources, solar, battery storage and various other energy sources, 550 megawatts of energy available to the grid. So in terms of the enterprises that we will be supporting, we will be looking for these enterprises to also be contributing towards stabilizing our grid by contributing 550 megawatts. One energy one-stop shop operational, the DTIC has been given the responsibility, in addition to the one-stop shop that we have, to unlock investment opportunities, to unblock investment challenges. We've now been given the responsibility to now deal with the energy issues in relation to supporting investors quickly set up and be able to contribute to stabilizing the grid. And here it would be in areas including permitting and everything else that municipalities must do, all the various challenges that comes with even enterprises wanting to be energy resilient and having to navigate through the various legislative hurdles. This energy one-stop shop will be the area where they will be guided, they will be given sufficient support, and we will have a number of departments that would help investors, that would help enterprises to then as quickly as possible be able to either produce energy for themselves or help with energy-related equipment and components. Then on output number 22, expedited regulatory amendments and flexibilities to promote energy efficiency, members would be aware that within the DTIC group, we've got regulatory agencies whose job it is to make sure that particularly consumers in general are able to access goods and buy goods, use goods that are in line with regulatory standards in ways that will help protect them, and it will help protect even companies that may be purchasing those goods. So I'm talking here about institutions such as your South African Bureau of Standards, our NRCS, the work that they do. Now we're bringing that work also here in energy, looking at energy efficient products, how we can quickly bring those to standard in terms of ensuring that the standards are there to protect consumers, to know that when they buy a good, that good is of a standard that is agreed and seen as adequate, and the product will not harm them because you know, low standard products are allowed to just be allowed randomly in the market. So these institutions have now been activated to make sure that the standards that we require to protect our consumers, to protect the market in general, are in place, including with regards to energy. The DTIC Energy Action Plan as you would see the chairperson deals with some of the issues I've indicated, but it also captures some of the other issues that will still come as we are going through the green economy and various other areas of our concern. The first is speeding up processes to accelerate private sector investment in energy generation. I've spoken to that. Increasing levels of private sector investment in electricity generation, enabling regulatory flexibility on transformation, enabling regulatory flexibility in competition laws, introducing an energy resilience scheme to assist firms to mitigate the impact of load shedding, ensuring that and encouraging energy efficiency through these appropriate standards, measures to protect consumers and energy users, and then interventions that support industrialization, particularly renewable energy components. Then output again on green economy and stakeholder engagement. For the green economy targets, there are three outputs. One is a strategy and advocacy responding to green trade barriers. And members would be aware that we are dealing with a particularly interesting scenario here, where we are going to potentially be facing what is essentially a tax on our products due to the carbon intensity nature of our production processes. And as a department, we are working with a number of stakeholders to see how we can push back as far as possible this unjust proposition, that on top of the fact that we've agreed that we need to transform, now forces us into an uncompetitive state by putting a tax on our export products. And this is the work that we will be doing. That's why we call it advocacy there, because we will be working with partner countries, partners across the world to see how we push back on this carbon border adjustment mechanism, particularly with countries that themselves now have ramped up their own importation of coal. So that's the work we will be doing there. And then an EV strategy, EV meaning new energy vehicles, electric vehicle strategy that would be finalized, and then finalization of the green hydrogen commercialization framework. So that is the kind of the totality of the work that we will be doing as far as green economy targets are concerned. Then on our stakeholder engagements and impacts, I'm now on slide 20. 10 business fora that will be hosted, and we do host this business fora with our partner countries throughout the world. Our aim when we do this is to increase our exports and outward investment. We will be looking at 1,000 case studies of firms, of workers, entrepreneurs, professionals, communities that are impacted by the DTIC measures, including 12 local film documentaries that will tell the South African story. And here it's really to go back and showcase the impact of our work in communities. Various communities looking at the impact of the work that we do on people's lives, and using these case studies to also be a feedback mechanism on the policies that we pursue and on some of the interventions that we have put in place. So 52 community outreach programs that will be undertaken by the DTIC group. And then there's five conferences, and this will include the big ones that members will be aware of, GOA, the BRICS. We are planning to also have another Black industrialist conference. We're planning to have a worker summit, and these are some of the interventions we are planning to have. As far as the Black Industrialists and the worker the worker summit are concerned, these are really important national priorities where we use this. One, to showcase what has been achieved so far by Black industrialists, to deal with any challenges that Black industrialists may be facing, to help us realign and reassess our own policies going forward. And these platforms assist us to be able to do that. And then we will be looking at 10 successful actions completed on price monitoring and excessive pricing or price gouging. On addressing crime and red tape and state capacity, we also have a responsibility in helping the country address the grey listing challenge, and we would be publishing a Know Your Shareholder regulations and follow-ups. That's our output number 24, and our output 42 is a metal trading system that is developed to identify stolen public infrastructure entering the scrap market value chain, going into our export markets or the legitimate metal production industries. In this way, we would also now be contributing to addressing crime. On red tape and state capability, four high impact measures to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the DTIC policy and program interventions. That is our output number 39. And then we've got 10 high impact measures to reduce red tape and improve turnaround times in administration of incentives and work of our agencies. That is our output number 40, and output number 44 captures six impact assessments or enhancement of trade instruments or measures. Then moving on to state capacity, our ability to be responsive, and social partnerships that are key in driving the work that we will be doing. We have five outputs there, four pieces of priority legislation that would be amended and submitted to the executive cabinet and parliament, seven master plans managed and one master plan to be finalized, oversight of IDC, NEF and ECIC to ensure that at least 95% of what essentially is their planned KPIs are achieved, oversight of other entities to ensure that at least 95% of their planned KPIs are achieved, and then 50 measures and acquisitions where public interest conditions would be incorporated. Then I'll just quickly move on to the outputs. Chair, we've got four types of outputs that constitute the 45 outputs. We've got core outputs that we spoke about at the beginning. Here we measure the performance and transformation of the economy and reflect some of the ultimate objectives we are trying to achieve. We've got 13 programmatic targets that would help achieve the aims of core targets, but directly measure the impact of specific activities, including industrial finance, as we've indicated. And then we've got 15 of our outputs that are really enabling outputs. They will enable achievement of programmatic targets by creating the systems and environments that make our activities work. And then we've got seven contextual response targets often involve work outside of our core programs and are designed to respond to the pressing need of the economy and to encourage the DTIC to be flexible and agile in the way that we do our work. So the new approach, Chair, as I've indicated, plans for results and impacts and not for audit outcomes. And it's an important point to make because for the first time, notwithstanding the external challenges and limitations that our stretched targets may impose, we have put out those targets. So where there are external challenges, we'll have to deal with it at that point. But in order to improve our own accountability, instead of putting in inputs where we've got a lot more control, we've gone out and put outputs and outcomes in the way that we've set out our APP. The APP sets out sensitivities, codependencies, and external factors that may affect our outputs. You would see in the APP we've set some of those, not really as excuses for not doing the work, but limitations that upfront we are mindful of, that we want the committee to also be mindful of whilst our commitment stays to achieve the outputs that we set for ourselves. And members, I'm sure, would agree, Chair, that it is ambitious and will require a break in the DTIC's traditional ways of working. It also requires that some existing activities be discontinued or reduced to refocus resources on our new priorities. It measures the DTIC plans and focus on functions that help us to achieve economic returns against public resources that are invested in some of the work that we do. And it requires active engagement, not just about what has been achieved, but what we are doing, what we are learning, how we are responding, what we possibly are missing, and about the quality of decision-making and resource allocation. It will enable the APP to be adjusted in light of experience, opportunities, and new challenges. So as Minister would call it, it's version 1.0. Of the work that we are doing. I think, Chair, perhaps in the next slide, what I can quickly do is just take the committee through what it would take to operationalize the new approach that, as I had indicated, has at its core enhancing delivery of services to our investors, various players in the economy in a manner that is resource effective. Number one, dealing with staffing. It's going to require that staff within the DTIC are moved to areas where the core outputs are required to be delivered. And where specialist skills are required, we need to have a much more agile way of bringing those in so that timing and delivery of those outputs is not compromised. It's going to need us to focus on our skills, focus on skills in key areas, including project management, monitoring, and financial evaluation. Vacancies, 25% of our critical vacancies to be filled per quarter based on new skills required. Regarding funding, we're going to reprioritize funding through shifting and environments of the budget to the core programs, automation of manual customer-facing systems, and provision of reliable internet capability. Consolidation of some of our own programs. Members may have noted that going forward, we've reduced from 10 to 9 programs. This is part of consolidating programmatically, making sure we are breaking silos and we are optimizing our resources. Accommodation. We are now in the process of finalizing our new ops center, and that is going to be the area where we will be coordinating our implementation, having space for managers to quickly deal and, with issues and resolve problems. And in terms of systems, again, you would have noted, members, that we want to reduce bureaucracy on staffing and finance. And as I had indicated, a more integrated way of working, integrated reporting, both internally and external of the DTIC. So role of our programs, of the 9 programs, 6 are core to achievement of the targets. And these are programs focusing on trade, investment and special industrial development, sectors, incentives, exports, competition and transformation. The integrated approach requires that each program contributes outside its traditional core mandate. An example that we stated on the slides, that the trade branch will not focus on just negotiation and administration of trade agreements, but will also be required to have a mandate to contribute to jobs, investment, community outreach, and writing up of case studies of impact of trade policies on the lives of South Africans. The sector program targets will be reviewed to shift programs from notional or coordinating role to a program of more active frontline company support across the different sectors. So that is just by way of us indicating to you even how the roles within the department will be changing, adjusting in order to deliver more towards this new APP. And then 2 programs are essential support services to the core programs, administration and research. They provide overall coordination, external stakeholder management, monitoring and evaluation, human resource enabling, finance management, ICT, legal, and what essentially our back office or the oil that makes everything run. Those are the work that is captured in the 2 programs. In addition, the administration program through the Office of the Director General will provide overall support and oversight to all entities that report to the ministry. So in the next slide, I think what we essentially indicate there to members, just to show you how we will be implementing this. It's just some of the accountability fora within the department that will then be set out, and the resource allocation to be reviewed, and engagements with external, with external stakeholders, and the adjustment to the organogram that I've already spoken to. Then on cross-cutting focus and gender mainstreaming, an important area in the delivery of the DTIC's work program, the APP outputs ensures focus on women empowerment. I'm now on slide 28. So, women empowerment, gender mainstreaming through the work of the DTIC. We are prioritizing empowerment of women as workers, entrepreneurs, managers, and deployment of targeted resources. Use of regulatory powers and coordinating functions to support meaningful participation of designated groups. Realignment of procurement practices in order to meet the 40% target of procurement awarded to women-owned enterprises. And we want to also focus on interventions that benefit women indirectly, such as industrial finance, master plans, empowerment funding, export promotion, which benefit sectors which employ large numbers of women. So as you can see there, that our focus on gender mainstreaming is broad but targeted. So cross-cutting focus, that's on the districts, and here we're dealing with a district development model. Members would have heard me talk about the focus that we are going to have in the APP as set out on the areas outside the main metros where we want to now target services. Now the department will mainstream the DDM model through coordination of the DTIC's work with other spheres of government and with a renewed outreach program which takes the DTIC's group, the DTIC group services to the 52 districts and metros. The department will allocate all chief directors to districts as district champions for rural and underserved districts. And as you can see there, we start laying out those districts and work is already underway to make sure that all the chief directors are deployed in all the districts as set out in the slide. And then on the APP and the DTIC group, one of the important place of delivery in terms of our outputs and the APP is ensuring that there is alignment, not just within the DTIC on the APP, but between the DTIC and the various agencies of the department. So what we are setting out there is work that has been done to ensure that that alignment takes place. Then the slide that follows is just a slide also that shows as an example, we've taken one entity, ECIC, this is the entity that is responsible for insurance of our export products. As you can see, the contribution to the DTIC key performance indicators, they are already showing that they are contributing to the 300 billion in manufacturing of exports to the rest of the continent. And you can also see there in their outcomes, 27 billion in support program aligning directly to the APP of the department. Then I'll turn to the risks, assumptions and partnerships that are required. And here again, members, we are just setting out some of the things that may very well affect our ability to achieve the work that we've set ourselves out to achieve. The risk of not investing in change management, that's a big one. That is why we are working very hard to ensure that internally we deal with all of those things. And then externally is the key assumptions that we've included in our own analysis to come to our targets: global growth, geopolitical factors, new major shocks, energy availability, transport and logistics infrastructure, implementation of the AFCFTA. And then, of course, there are dependencies that relate to state coordination as set out in that slide. Then I'll quickly deal with some of the external environmental factors. Of course, we work within a context where there are municipalities. So to the extent that municipalities are not functional, it also have an impact on our work. Port infrastructure and logistics, law enforcement and stability to support investment, legal certainty and compliance, timely allocation of resources. Those are some of the areas that we have set out there. And again, indicating in terms of the external environment, global and domestic environment, reliable supply of energy, efficient and responsive visa system. And that is really for the investors. consistent water supply for homes and industries, and supply chain stability. The external environment in this context, as I've indicated, refers to developments in the global and domestic economy which may impede or assist the DTIC to meet the outputs target that we have set ourselves. Then I'll just quickly indicate to members our budget, our baseline, as members can see, for the 3 years going forward, is going to have a little bit of a dip in 2024-2025, but then we expect a slight increase in 2025-2026, and then we are working now of a baseline of 10.2 billion rand that is allocated to the department. I think, Chair, with your permission, and DM, with your permission, I will stop here, having taken the members largely through our APP, what informs it, the history in terms of its evolution, and where we are going in terms of the way forward, some of the challenges that we may come across. But I think the most important being the fact that for the first time we've set out an output driven APP that really allows members to be able to hold us accountable, and it helps us to focus on the goal and not be lost in the inputs. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dipsy. At this stage, then, we will open the floor to honorable members. Just for the minister logging in, and then don't know whether he was kicked out, so him logging in.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to members of the committee, honourable members.
Good morning. Good morning, the honourable minister. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we are now taking questions from members. We'll allow you and the team then to respond to the questions. Thank you so much. I see the hands ready, Honorable Launt, followed by Honorable Moimang, and then Honorable Boshoff. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the colleagues. Chair, you've seen that I am live, it's nobody else, so I'm going to just take off my video and then go through my questions, please.
Okay.
I do want to start off with the compliment. I mean, compared to even previous years, but also other departments that have briefed us, I mean, it was refreshing how we got the report this morning. And I do want to commend the presenter on that. So, let's start with positive there. And I really hope that that will also translate into outputs. And that is one of my first remarks. The new approach, it appears to move in the right direction. Outcomes is needed, and that's agreed. I am a little bit worried about the comment that says less focus on audits and then more on the outcomes, where in fact it can be done, both can be achieved. You can still meet your requirements and the threshold that you set yourself and get the audit outcomes you want and the target you set yourself. So that was one concern that just caused a little bit of a red flag. The timeline to get everything in place for this new approach, what measures are put in place to ensure that it doesn't negatively impact any of the current programs that's currently in place? I mean, human beings by our very nature resistant to change. And I'm specifically worried about the staffing section and what pushback there will be and how it might affect the current programs and how you would ensure that that does not negatively impact anything that currently is ongoing. I output 42 was mentioned the metal trading system that's developed to identify the stolen public infrastructure, which is that's commendable, and hopefully that can be put in place quite quickly, because that adds an unnecessary last burden on our fiscus and replacing what is already in place to service the country. But linked to that, the export ban that was put on scrap metal, it seems a bit like a blunt instrument. And now my question is the effectiveness, because we haven't really seen a downturn in vandalism. In fact, it appears that it has been on the same level or even on the increase. So has that been effective? And how do you measure that and determine that? And if not, what other steps are being put in place to maybe to address that? I also, right at the end, I missed the slide now, but I mean, I know a high-level delegation was sent to the states recently, but I mean, our participation in AGOA is at risk, and it's all good and well having these grand plans, but if we, through our stance on the Ukraine-Russian situation, put our participation in something like AGOA at risk that is critical to our economy, wouldn't that then be wise to firstly temper the approach and maybe be on the right side of history, but also what is being done to make sure, and has there been any success in those talks to mitigate the risk that we are now our participation in that? Then, Chair, just I've got three more formal points. The energy resilience that has been spoken about. Now, my concern is we've seen this a few places. How do you ensure that you don't work in isolation, making sure that everybody pulls in the same direction? And there's low-hanging fruits, and you spoke about taking out the red tape and making sure that the necessary legislative requirements are met. But are you aware of the possibilities that there is around Petro-SA and getting that gas energy systems in place? And if you're not aware, would you be able to maybe check in on that and make sure that we speed that up? Because that is slowly but surely where you can get areas a lot less dependent on Eskom, and that can then be utilized elsewhere. The one thing I did give the positive comments on the new approach, but on your outputs and jobs created, it's frustrating to get these presentations year in and year out, yet we keep moving backwards in the fight against unemployment. And I made a mental note, maybe we should at some stage look at what was promised in jobs created over the past 3, 4, 5 years, and actually then measure it up, because ultimately that is how you measure your success. And unfortunately, across the pond, we are failing there. And it's nice putting these figures on the board, but that is one of the critical ones to keep yourself accountable. Then the 1.3 billion in financial support, I think it was output 17 or 18, to support SMMEs. We had a similar presentation from Department of Small Business Development, and how do you ensure you don't trip over one another? And critically important, what criteria will you use? I said it to them as well, and I want to say it here. It's much more difficult getting a small business started up and operating successfully. And then those that have actually crossed those first few hurdles and survived, those should be the one that gets prioritized. Those are the ones that should be mothballed and made sure that we look after them, they keep the jobs and can possibly expand. And I just want to find out from the department if there's any criteria that you're going to apply to that, or is it something that any small business, irrespective of where you are, how big or small, if you've proven that you're established, you're creating jobs, you're contributing to the economy, that you are eligible for that. Then just your alignment, I touched briefly, but the DTIC Energy Action Plan, how that will align with the new energy minister and his roles. It appears that he doesn't have the full authority, it appears that he doesn't have a full job description yet. And how much of this will you then slot into what his roles would be, and how much of it would there'll be a territorial fight about who needs to look after what? And then there's one thing that I would appreciate, Chair, if you would allow me. There's people that do charity work in the Eastern Cape that have applied for the necessary import permits, and they've got containers stuck in Kucha. And if you can maybe put me in contact with the right person, so that we can then just close that loop and get maybe those containers through. They've done all the necessary approvals, but that would also be appreciated. Even if somebody reaches out to me offline, that would be appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Lord. Honorable Moima.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to the Minister and the team of the department, including also the Deputy Minister. Chair, let me also start by expressing an appreciation from the presentation made, particularly given the emphasis that was made to make the Select Committee appreciate the distinction between the previous APP and the new APP, the criticisms that was identified that we leveled, and how the department has responded to those is a bit confusing because it talks about the core outputs and targets, the three outcomes. But after the three outcomes, it also again talks about the 10 core targets. And then later it also talks about the 10 core outputs of the 45 outputs, which can be quite you need to be on your toes, Honorable Minister, to be able to make those distinctions. The only question that I want to ask in relation to these changes, Honorable Minister, will be the effect on this, given the fact that normally left was 12 months of the sixth administration. You'll remember that from the SONA, I think the take home of the department in SONA 2023 focused on facilitating increased localization, which we agree that is one of the outputs, creating increased economic growth and employment opportunities, attracting investment, and also increasing trade under the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. An area that is missing from this 10 core targets is the implementation of the master plans, which is one of the priorities that was mentioned in SONA. Very probably I might have missed it. Maybe the team can give a sense in terms of where this is located, because I think from the previous implementation, an emphasis has been made on the automatic matter with regard to the automatics, with regard to clothing and textile, poultry, sugar, agriculture, and global business services. Maybe if there can be more elaborate in terms of ensuring that this area also find more pronouncement in the ten core targets that forms an integral part of the new APP. As part of the special development framework, which in terms of the new APP is combined with investment, there was reference to two new SEZ, while we appreciate this new SEZ. It will be important just to probably bring to the fore as to whether this will not have an effect in terms of the current SEZ that are existing, the bottlenecks that are there. And maybe just in elaboration in terms of where this SEZ are located, given the fact that in terms of our mandate, we are more focused on locals and provinces, the extent of the additional priorities at the level of our provinces and local municipalities, we'll update that. And then the third one, Chair, relates to the output that speaks to jobs and energy, which is a response to by the department in terms of the crisis they were faced with. Particularly the energy action plan of the department and those 8 interventions. Just want to raise one point that I want the department also to look into. One of the areas that has been identified as particularly with regard to the Northern Cape Transmission Development Plan has been the capability of the network to handle the forecasted load and generation in the province over the last few years. The limitation in relation to the infrastructure to evacuate the energy from the current renewable plants. You remember that the first 3 to 4 mainly were developed around Northern Cape. So capacitating or building the capability of the transmission to be able to evacuate this energy can help, because if we strengthen it, it will be able to help the capacity and the ability of the transmission line to evacuate a large concentration of renewable generation that is anticipated in the province. There has been an area raised around the capital investment if you make a comparison between the transmission line between Upington and Gauteng province and Upington and Western Cape. We share, it's an area that I want to impress upon the minister through his colleagues, both at the level of the public enterprise and also the energy department, to make an assessment as to whether, in terms of investment, has it been skewed towards the Western Cape, which to a larger degree could also then without necessarily pitting provinces against each other. But I think if capital investment to a larger degree was skewed, which could have been the deliberate program of the board and the previous CEO to ensure that the battery storage has its more biasness towards the Western Cape. To a larger degree, it has also weakened then the capacity of the transmission line to be able to evacuate the energy from up in the area towards Gauteng. So it's an area that I want to deposit. But the last one, Minister, relates to the GDM order. There's a slide that speaks to that, and I want to express an appreciation on the part of the minister for taking the first to Northern Cape. It was not only just Northern Cape; it was part and parcel of my constituency. So it will be important to express that appreciation, because the ministry worked hand in hand towards the constituency, with our constituency officials, to ensure that there is a synergy between the work that the department is doing with our constituency officials in our provinces. The other question that I want to raise is related to the social employment fund. Its discontinuation, particularly as an integral part of the presidential employment stimulus package. Is there any initiative that will be put in place to augment this? Because it could have an impact in terms of the part of government to also create jobs. An explanation, because what is quite clear is that the discontinuation also has an effect in terms of the work done by the department entities and its commitment to create jobs. The other question that I want to pose, Chair, relates to the the program one, which is administration, the employment equity targets in terms of the 50% that is no longer applicable in our targets, but also the 3.5% representation of people with disabilities. How will that help in terms of advancing our agenda for equity and economic empowerment? And the planning, the intention to amend the Companies Act is this given the limitation on time, is it the message that the tabling to Parliament will happen as soon as we can, as soon as possible, or is it the message that it will be deferred to the 7th administration, and then on the incentives, the target to facilitate investment from investment pledges, the target was reduced from 26.7 billion in the previous financial year to 25 billion in 2023. Maybe if an explanation could be given in terms of these changes. Other than that, Chair, we are happy with the presentation as tabled by the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Moima. Honourable Bashot.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and good morning. Yes, it's still morning to everybody and the Minister. I'm going to switch off my video for okay. Edward. Chair, for the first time in a few years, I've really enjoyed the presentation. It really is a change from previous ones, and I must congratulate them on a very comprehensive report. However, as Honourable Lance said, we can achieve everything in this APP, but unfortunately we sit with an electricity problem. And without electricity, there's absolutely no economic growth and job creation, and the market is not conducive for investment. And a capable state will definitely not be achieved under the present climate. But be it as it may, the biggest problem South Africans are sitting with, especially the citrus farmers, is the European Union's regulations. And I don't see any discussions taking place with this, in this regard, bar the one where we had a short interaction with the European Union Parliament a month ago. And I just want to know if there is any agreement, a renewed agreement, to put at ease the minds of the citrus industry. And then reading an article the other day, the Department of Land, Agric and Land Reform said they are very skeptical about the EU's citrus import regulations that were resolved at the World Trade Organization. That a dispute was lodged last year, and still the citrus farmers and everybody do not see any work being done towards it. Another concern raised by the citrus farmers is the extra cost involved in having to store citrus at longer periods and lower temperature. And we did see that previously TPP were not geared to accommodate these new EU regulations. And what I'd like to know, are we now ready to be able to agree to these regulations or stipulations? And if we could be given a percentage of what the citrus export is and how much storage capacity is available currently to again put the citrus farmers' mind at ease. And then, sorry, let me just, as everybody says, page from page to page. My colleague also touched on the AGOA agreement, and I'd just like to know where we stand with regard to that, because we know since 2000, South Africa has been getting billions of rands worth of discount with regard to trade. Then I'd also like to know, with regard to the SEZ, where do we stand in relation to the SEZ in Mpumalanga, known as the Nkomazi SEZ? This has definitely been a white elephant, or the elephant in the room for that matter. And then on slide 17, output 8. 8 billion for financial support of SMMEs, women and youth. What about those with disabilities? Are we not putting aside any budget for them? It's about time that we reached out to them to assist them, please. And then how much of the 8 billion would be channeled towards township SMMEs, especially those in the rural areas? And then on slide 15, output 1, 200 billion in investment pledges. How have these pledges assisted in the creation of projects and jobs? Or how will they assist in the creation of projects and jobs? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bosso. Honourable Tiango.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I follow on Honourable Bosso. I was the convener of that meeting with the EU parliamentarians, and it was interesting. And as a parliament, we had agreed that we would take this forward. However, I think it is also important that the executive plays its role in that, in its role in the question of agreements that are reached. Now, if we're looking at particularly the citrus thing, they treat North Africa or the Mediterranean rim different to the rest of Africa. They don't have those restrictions on the Mediterranean rim. And possibly we should look at the question of most favored nation positions with Europe when we're dealing with Europe. If they're dealing with North Africa in that way, then they should be dealing with the rest of Africa and the rest of the world in the same way. However, sometimes I think politics enters into business and it is used as a lever to force people into a particular direction that they need to agree with or not agree with. The rest of the questions really have been asked by Honorable Moiman and for once Honorable Lont, but he made a very interesting remark. People are resistant to change. I think some people are still resistant to change from 1994. Having said that, Minister, let us look at how we review the trade agreements, including AGOA. AGOA and the chicken dumping situation, where has that gone to? And is it not possible for us to look at the facilitation and funding of NGOs or cooperatives that can actually take advantage of AGOA so we can look at that particular export market? I was listening to an interview on BBC the other night with the Prime Minister of Malaysia. And he was asked the question, how do you treat the United States? He said, the United States is our friend. How do you treat China? He says, China is a neighbor and an important friend. We treat them equally, but we have our own sovereignty. And maybe that is the route to go in, our own sovereignty, and that we don't fall into the trap of being used by either the new Cold War and the non-aligned movement should reemerge, particularly in the areas of trade. Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you very much. Honorable Matevula, I want to ask Ms. Madia Solomon to read out your questions, but if you want to give it a try, you can go ahead. Okay, Mr. Solomon, can you please read out from the chat?
Okay, the first, thank you, Chairperson. The first question from Honorable Makavula is, what progress has been made so far in Messina, the Mikado and Fitahomo Dubatsi SEZ in reaching its final operations? The second question is, what relationship do you have with the Department of Transport to make sure that the roads are close to industrial parks are in good condition and accessible in order to attract investors. For example, the road to Nowankowa Industrial Park, which is in a very bad condition. Question number three, in terms of transformation, how many small citrus fruit producers so far has your department assisted in exporting their products? Question number four, what does your department have to promote local brands or encouraging of community members to buy local brands? And the fifth question is, what is your department doing to prevent counterfeit goods from entering the country? Those are the five questions, Shri.
All right. Thank you very much. For me, I think we welcome the ADP. We're happy that at least this time around it moves away from measuring the number of reports that are submitted to the minister. Even though we, as members, we don't know the content of those reports. So we really appreciate the new approach. I think, as you were mentioning, the risks, I think for me, one of the risks is the fact that most people that will be also carrying out the work of these annual performance plans, about five of them, if I'm not mistaken, are acting, starting from the DG, DDG for industrial policy, DDG for competition policy, and CFO. I think that is one of the risks that I'm identifying in carrying out the annual performance plan. I think the minister need to perhaps assure us that there won't be any negative impact on carrying out the annual performance plans. I just want also to check with regard to the 1 million jobs that are supported through master plans. It would have been good if we were to break down these master plans in terms of numbers. For example, auto, these will be the number of jobs that will come out of that particular master plan. The issue of energy, most members have raised that concern. We're currently on stage six. We don't know how long, because it is said till further notice. We don't know how long it will take, and also what impact it will have on the plans of the department, and also the megawatts that which are about 500 plus. I don't think they'll do much in terms of alleviating the problem that we are facing. We are happy that there will be about 15 billion that will be spent outside the five metros. Because it has always been our concern as members of the committee, where whenever we receive a briefing from departments, we raise this with the Department of Transport, because in terms of particularly their rail transport, focusing on three corridors, which is Gauteng, Western Cape, that is Cape Town, KZN, that is Thekwini. Nothing is said about other provinces. We always are concerned that, especially as members of the National Council of Provinces representing the interests of our provinces, we get disappointed when departments are not doing anything in provinces, especially the rural provinces. Perhaps linked to that, there's an issue of the two ECZ or SEZ that will be announced. If you can indicate exactly which are those already, Honorable Boshoff has indicated the one from Mpumalanga that has been always on the queue of the SEZ that are still to be proclaimed. I will also add the Wild Coast from the Eastern Cape. It's always been there on the list of the SEZ that are going to be proclaimed. On the issue of the, I'm still not clear about the amounts that the plans are talking to for it.
We've lost you, Chairperson.
For example, the issue of a black industrialist, the 40 billion. Can you hear me now? Or is it only honorable? My network is unstable. Can you hear me?
We hear you now, Chair.
Yes, we can hear you, Chair.
Oh, okay. I was going to stop and then ask Honorable Moimang to take over. Okay, let me continue if I still am. I just want to know whether these are assumptions from the part of department or there's also participation by the industrial black industrialists with regard to the 23,000 jobs that will be coming from the industrialists. So I want to find out whether the industrialists themselves have a say or it's just an assumption on the part of the department, but also with regard to other amounts, the 700 billion that will be supporting the manufacturing, and also the 300 billion that will be also supporting manufacturing and the export to Africa. Whether those that will be responsible for that, I mean, is it their commitment that they will do that to the amount of 300 billion and also to the amount of 700 billion, or is just the calculation that has been done within the department? On the issue of shares for workers, who's going to pay for the shares? Is it the workers themselves, or is the department going to assist workers in buying shares? Also on the, still on the issue of energy, you talk about assisting with the mitigation of the impact of load shedding. In what form is it going to take place? And then on the issue of the electric vehicle. I understand that the Department of Transport is still busy with the regulations. And on the other hand, the department is finalizing the strategy. I don't know if there is any collaboration between the Department of Transport and the DTIC. In terms of addressing the issue of crime, I see that the focus is on grey listing. And I think one other area. I just want to find out with regard to illicit trade, what measures are being taken by the department or government generally. And also the issue that Honorable Brother said always raised of a so-called business forum, who always ask for 30%. And if they're not given that 30%, then projects won't continue. I think Honorable Boshoff has touched on the issue of the AGOA, the review, how far is the review now? She's also touched on the issue of the export. I think there's an issue that that was raised by the DG with regard that on the plans, that the plans should not be done to get a clean audit mainly for audit purposes. I agree with Honorable Lon that you can get the same clean audit, but also carrying out the plan ambitious as they are. I just want to find out if there is this fear, whether there has been any engagement of with the AG so that they know that you have another approach in terms of carrying out your plans different from previous plans. The issue of cannabis, there's a concern, especially in areas in the Eastern Cape around the Lusikisiki, where there's a fear that there could be outsiders who will be taking over the cannabis from their areas. To what extent are people in those areas being empowered so that they also play a role on the issue of the cannabis? The last point is on the issue of the solar panels. The Minister of Finance announced the incentives. My question are two. One is to perhaps whether if any uptake from the companies and the households with regard to the PVs, and also the manufacturing of those, what is the role of the local industry in the manufacturing of the PVs? I think that's all from me. Thank you very much. I will then hand over to the minister. You came at the right time when the members were starting to ask questions, and then it will be up to you in terms of the approach, whether the DDGs will respond to the question, and then you make the closing remarks. Over to you, Minister.
Well, first, thank you very much, Chairperson. May I first start by asking if I can keep my camera off? I'm now in the basement of a building, so you will think I am covered by load shedding. So I will just briefly illustrate how dark I have.
You can switch it off, Minister. We are already losing you now.
Are you able to hear me now, Chairperson?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for the questions. And I would like to first thank the committee for the matters that you've raised, and also for the very warm reception that the committee has given to the new format of the annual performance plan. I think it's very encouraging. It is a very significant shift in the plan that the department has historically done, not only in this administration, but in fact since the advent of annual performance plans. So this is the first time that we've shifted from measuring our activity to measuring the outputs and the impact of the work of the committee. And it was done in spite of all the risks and all the challenges. Historically, the department focused on activities because that is what it had control over. And what I have asked the department as we developed the annual performance plan was to be prepared to take some degree of risk in shifting to a better framework. And though there are many things that can go wrong that is outside the control of the department, nonetheless, if we work hard, there are many things that can go right that we can influence. And we know that the South African public is looking for a different way of working. So thank you very much. Each of the honorable members have been very positive about the new approach. And I'm going to therefore appreciate Honorable Lont and Honorable Moimang and Honorable Dango, Honorable Matebula, Honorable Boshoff, and the chair. Now, when I look at the questions, there's about 37 questions that I've counted. I'm going to try where I can to combine questions. I'm going to keep the replies
fairly short where I can because of the volume of questions. And I do recognize that a number of the questions turn more on the operational issues of what the department does generally and what it's done over the past year, whereas the presentation financial year. But honorable members are right to raise those questions because there's a strong connection between the challenges that there are out in the economy and what the department has to do. So if I start with a question that's come up from a few members on the comments that we've made in the presentation on the fact that we're now planning for outcomes and not for audits. Now, I'd like to just talk that through a little bit because it's an important and in some ways ground-shifting way in which we're looking at the work of the department. And I can also clarify what it means and what it does not mean. And I think honorable members will no doubt, I think, find a lot of comfort in those comments. So let me start by saying that when any department sets its annual performance targets, it normally tries to develop targets that are relatively easy to audit. So they would be what the Auditor General calls SMART targets. They measurable, they simple, they generally within the control of the department. But when you're in a mandate area that is very different, it's a mandate area, something that happens in the Federal Reserve in the United States can impact on manufacturing in South Africa. A war in Europe and the impact that it has on oil prices can impact on manufacturing in South Africa. A virus in China can impact on manufacturing in South Africa. And so these things mean that typically any department faced with this complexity will play it safe and will go only for those things that it knows can be audited, and the Auditor General will give it a positive vetting because it's in the control of the department. If we say we're going to have 10 workshops, we generally can control that we will have that 10 workshops. Even if things go wrong in the world, you can have your 10 workshops and you can, it's easy to audit compliance with that. But if you say that we're going to seek to get 200 billion rand in investment pledges, if suddenly there was a new virus that had to hit society, or there was a major set of floods or drought across the country, all of these can affect our outcomes, and therefore whether an audit process will find that we have complied with the objectives and the goals that we've set ourselves. So on slide 24, what the department says is that our plans, meaning the annual performance plan, is driven by the need to get results and impact. We haven't developed the plan so that it is easy for us to tick off in an audit that we've achieved all of our workshops and all of our reports and so on. That does not mean that we don't want to still get an audit outcome that shows we're using the money of the state and of the South African people responsibly. We have a legal obligation to look after the money carefully, and an audit is really a way of the Auditor General coming back and saying the books of account are a true reflection, and the department has spent the money in accordance with what is required. But sometimes in our attempt to make sure that we comply completely with every possible prescript, we slow things down to the point where very little gets done. It's a challenge that many different people have raised in different parts of the administration. And it's one that the Auditor General has to look at a higher degree of robustness in how audits are conducted. This, by the way, has come up from government at national level. It's come up from governments. For example, the Western Cape government has raised the same thing. It's come up wherever we have public entities. So it's not a matter where one political party has a view. I think everybody who's in governance recognizes that danger. We do need, we absolutely do need a strong and effective audit. We do need to ensure that we comply with the requirements that we have in that respect. But at the same time, our principal focus must be on ensuring delivery to South Africa's people. So in moving with speed, we've got to be able to make sure that we record and clearly document everything that we do, and we are able to explain it. But the mindset mustn't start with compliance. The mindset must start with delivery. And then we must comply in the process of focusing on delivery, as opposed to a mindset that is focused in the first case just on a kind of blind compliance tick box mentality. So I still want the department to have a unqualified audit. I would still want every single cent that has been voted for the budget of the department to be accounted for and to be used wisely and prudently. This is public money, and we need to account for that. So I hope that that explains that we want an approach, and we want the Auditor General to also work with us in ensuring that we account properly, that we do in fact meet our audit obligations. Honorable Lont asked the question, the timeline for the new approach. We're kicking in immediately. I've now had, I think, though it is only the 9th of May, the DG will tell you that we've probably had about 6 separate meetings, if not more, on delivery in the new approach. And we've already achieved some of the outputs, not the full ones, but on some of them we're already able to see a positive approach. And the reason we've been able to do that, Honorable Lond, is we started to experiment with this approach even under the old APP. And so honorable members will know that we do on a quarterly basis, provide a report to the portfolio committee. And in that portfolio committee meetings, I've made the point that we're shifting to an output and outcome-based reporting system. Now we've made sure the plan catches up with our reporting system, and the plan also reflects that. It's a good point, Honorable Lon, that change management is an important element of working differently. And it will take time to get every single of the 1,200 staff retrained where training is needed, or refocused where it is. And in the more detailed document, we set out some steps, including staff training that every chief director is expected to do, to ensure that, in fact, we address that important part. If you look at slide 25, we indicate there issues like reassignment of human resources, provision of specialists, focus on skills in key areas, and so on. So we recognize that the drivers of the new approach will be staff, and I think some staff already very clearly in the new approach, and we're working hard to bring everybody on board. on slide 42 on the metal trading regime, we're constantly evaluating the effectiveness of all the measures we've put in place, and I will be applying my mind to the information. Of course, one of the things that we do take into account is there was an overhang of export permits that had been granted prior to the introduction of the temporary prohibition, and we did not cancel those. So for a period, they were still being exported. So all of this is under careful consideration at the moment. On matters of AGOA and the relationship with the United States, Honorable Lontes raised it. It's also come up from Honorable Dango Honorable Hai. And let me state that the economic relationship with the United States is very important. It's a big market for us, not only for raw materials, but also we export a significant quantity of manufactured products to the United States. It's also a market from which we draw foreign direct investment. There are American companies in the South African economy that indeed assist in ensuring that we meet our industrialization goals and help to employ South Africans. And it's a two-way thing that the United States also benefits from the economic relationship with South Africa. Of course, it's a much bigger economy, and it's got, in relative terms, the United States impact in our economy is very large. I can't claim that for South Africa, but I do want to make the point we are a significant supplier of critical minerals that go into the United States manufacturing base. So it's in the interest of South Africa to maintain that relationship and to ensure that we are able to attract American investment and we can have a strong trading relationship too. As we navigate all the complexities of a more fractured, a more polarized world, our national interest, the interest of South Africa, is to focus on how we can create jobs and how we can expand the size of the economy and give more opportunities to small businesses and young people. And that means that in the opportunities there are across the world in our economic relationship with countries in Asia, with countries in Europe, all of those are important opportunities. Our focus now in making sure that we can create more jobs and expand the economy and create more economic inclusion is to deepen the trading relationships with the rest of the African continent. And the African Continental Free Trade Area is a significant part of that. We are in discussion with the United States. We've had a number of meetings, and of course that conversations continue. And we're not only looking at the short-term issues of AGOA, but also the longer-term issues of AGOA. In respect of matters relating to Petro-SA and the challenges there, Honorable Lont, I'm going to request that one of the officials just reach out and see what specifically the challenges are that you are drawing attention to. On the output and jobs, it is a reality in market economies that you have both job growth and you have job losses. For this year, we've introduced for the first time, a measure where the department will focus on jobs as an explicit target. And so it will look at new job growth, and it will look at stabilization of existing jobs. I hope in future years that as the department builds on this annual performance plan, it would eventually be able to look at the net effect In other words, job growth, less job decline, to see the net effect of it. But this year, as the first step in bringing jobs as an explicit area, we're looking at output. We're looking at the jobs, the gross numbers. I'm going to jump for a moment to the to a jobs-related question that Honorable Khai, the chairperson, raised on the 1 million jobs. And I want to make the point, really two points, that it's 1 million jobs that are either supported by DTIC programs or that are covered by master plans. And we draw that distinction. I mean, we've just kept it very short in the main descriptor in the document for ease of reading. But to give an example, we would have a master plan in the clothing industry. And that master plan would cover a number of workers in that industry. But we would also have an agreement, for example, with a company called PepsiCo, that they would not retrench workers or reduce their headcount, the number of employees they have, for a certain number of years. Now, that's not a master plan connected metric or measurement. That is a competition linked one. And so we're taking all the different programs of the DTIC, not just master plans, and the aggregate, the total effect of all of that must be that our various measures must cover at least 1 million jobs. Turning back to Honorable Lon's question on the 1.3 billion rand for small and medium enterprises, we want to complement the important work done by the Department of Small Business Development. And we are finalizing criteria. Some of the detail will be made available publicly. But we've provided in the APP a sense of some of the key elements of that energy resilience plan. It is only a stepping stone. It's not a final solution to the energy issues, because it's a stepping stone to help companies in this particular period who are vulnerable. We're not going to be able to cover every small and medium enterprise. And so the criteria that will be announced will help to focus those to a greater extent. The energy measures that we put in place are in support of what the Minister of Electricity is doing. And my colleague there, Minister Ramakgopa, has a big responsibility. And our contribution is a relatively small part of helping him and the rest of cabinet meet the energy plan. We could take the view that because energy falls under other departments, we as the DTIC should only focus on our core mandate. But the truth is that our core mandate is affected by energy. So we're putting in place a target of new investment we want to get into energy. We're putting in place an energy one-stop shop to help private sector companies who are battling to navigate the regulatory requirements of the South African environment when they want to supply us with energy. For example, a company that wants to put up wind energy in the Eastern Cape or solar energy in the Northern Cape often don't know the regulatory challenges, and we're building a team in the DTIC in this one-stop energy shop to assist. So all of that can help the Minister of Electricity in meeting his important set of targets. I again will ask an official to reach out on the matter of the containers. A number of charities have in the past imported a product, and What we have not generally encouraged is the importation of secondhand clothing, but there's been many other instances where charities have done good work in society and they've imported other kinds of products. So we will ask the DG to get an official to talk to the Honourable Member. On Honourable Moemang's question, thank you very much. We have 12 months left of the sixth administration. Some of the work that we've done in the last few years that have been very positive were not captured in the annual performance plans. They were maybe more put into the reports that came to the ministry, and as honourable members have said, they're not privy to those reports. And so what we're doing is we're putting it all out there in the open, transparently, so that we can measure. So it's not that the work in the sixth administration will only start now. I have just come back this morning from a launch that we've planned now for 2 months ago already of the localization support fund, where, for example, Coca-Cola put 240 million rand up to help localize products in the South African economy, not Coca-Cola products, any product. So small businesses and others can work on it. For example, that fund is now looking at medical devices, it's looking at furniture, and it's looking at renewable energy components. They've been joined by a company called Air Liquide that has made 100 million rand available for a similar project, by Heineken that has made 200 million rand available. And so we're seeing very positive examples on the localization side that is very good. Honorable Moemang, it is true that the master plans are not in the 10 core output areas. And there's a very good reason for that. The master plans are in the annual performance plan. But what we've done is we've separated out things that are activities from things that are outputs. Now, in a master plan, a typical output of a master plan would be to increase investment. So what we've done in the core output, we have investment as a core output. And that 200 billion rand is going to be made up, among others, of our successful work in master plans in getting companies to make commitments. A master plan like the clothing master plan is focused on increasing local content and local production. And I see that Honorable Matebula made a good point about supporting local fashion. And what we will then do is when the clothing master plan achieves its outputs, that will go into that 40 billion rand additional local output that is in the core area. When we make cars, which is covered by the auto master plan, then we export a lot of those cars. They will help to go into the 700 billion rand in manufacturing exports. So this is how, in that dashboard of 10 core targets, it will cover a lot of the impact and outputs of the master plans. On the question of the SEZs that two members have asked, two honorable members have asked about the SEZs, we have a number of different SEZs that are vying for designation, where provinces have put up their hand and have put forward their SEZs. We're in the process of finalizing it. I hope that I would be able in about 2 weeks' time, or certainly not later than 3 weeks, to make an announcement in respect of one of the two special economic zones. The reason why it's taking a different form. In the past, we used to just announce in at the start of the year what are all the SEZs we're going to do in a year. Now we do it differently. Now we make sure that we recheck the business plans of special economic zones that we bring in proper governance arrangements, that we get provinces and municipalities to co-fund within their means. Because our example of a number of other SEZs, and honorable members have asked questions about those SEZs, have been that the old model of SEZs has not always been a good model. The old model is one where it's largely a provincial competence. The DTIC historically was just the funder. We had no say over anything else. And at the start of this administration, we said, no, no, we must change that. So we experimented with a new approach in the Tswane SEZ. We said the DTIC wants to have people on the board. We want to have a co-say on the project manager for the SEZ so that we don't have poorly qualified people appointed, that we want to see an investment case with commitments by investors to additional production. And that is what we do now. And so for all of the questions that have been asked about Kumasi and the other SEZs, the answer really is that some of those SEZs have really battled because they didn't have proper business plans in place. In Musina Makadu, we've had many problems with the environmental impact assessment area. So I'm happy that the department could be invited to take the select committee in future through some of those challenges and difficulties. So if it so pleases the select committee to have that on its program, then I would like the Director General and the Special Economic Unit, Special Economic Zone Unit, to do a presentation on those ones, including Fetahomo Tubatsi. Moving to the question that was asked about jobs and energy, there is an important relationship, and we do need to resolve the energy challenge to be able to unlock more job creation. But even as we rebuild our energy infrastructure, that can also be a source of additional job creation, including on localizing the component supplies that are used in energy. Honorable Moimang raised an important point about capital investment. I don't see a trade-off between transmission lines to the Western Cape and transmission lines to the Northern Cape. We need transmission lines to both areas because energy needs to be available across the country. And a lot of work that we do is helping to unlock opportunities in different parts of the country. So we've brought in now the district development model as a very important discipline on all of us in order to ensure that we don't neglect some parts of the country. On battery production, it's an area we're looking at carefully. While we do look at issues of minerals, it's also having researchers and other qualified technical personnel available in South Africa and in the areas where this is developed. Honorable Moimang, I'm happy that we had, in fact, piloted the new outreach program. We want to do at least 52 outreach visits. We've done the first one in the Northern Cape. And we've learned some very good lessons on how we can do this even better as we go to other districts. On the Special Employment Fund, obviously, this is a budget-related matter, and we are waiting to see that we get some progress there with funding that National Treasury can make available. We covered for this financial year, but from next financial year, we would need more of that. It may be very good for the work of the select committee that the select committee, in doing oversight, could also look at some of the these examples are in the Special Employment Fund, Social Employment Fund, and I would be, of course, appreciative of additional support that the Select Committee expresses for strengthening the resource allocation in this area. On the agenda of broad-based economic empowerment, it goes to issues of skills development. So many of the provisions in the past relating to matters like affirmative goals that have been set are within the domain of the Department of Employment and Labour. What we focus on is very strongly the area of ownership, the area of ownership. In the past was about trying to get the Black South African to have 5% or 15% of an existing company. We say, no, we've got to focus on bringing more Black South Africans to open their own businesses, to become industrialists, to learn in the market. The market is a hard place. Not everybody who opens a firm will succeed. Government can't guarantee that someone won't fail. It will require those entrepreneurs to be able to do it. But we hope many of the firms will survive, and even those who fail, that the entrepreneur has learned some valuable lessons when they pick themselves up and start all over again. Because we've got to increase the number of successful firms in the economy. On the Companies Amendment Act, it will come to the NCOP as soon as it's been considered it will come to Parliament as soon as it's been considered by Cabinet. Honourable Boshoff, the electricity challenge is important, which is why there are 8 actions that the DTIC is focusing on, even though we're not a electricity department per se, but we must make our contribution. We have had and will continue to have quite significant engagements on citrus with the EU, certainly more than 10 meetings at the level of officials, heads of state, minister level, and others. Most recently, we met with the president of Finland, and we raised the citrus matter, and that was something of the order of 2 weeks ago. So this is quite a big area. And we are looking at all the areas, Honorable Boshoff, that you've raised. Obviously, the DTIC works very closely with DALRAD, the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform, who would be responsible much more for the supply chain, including all the key elements of it. And it goes also to the question that was put by Honorable Matebula around support for small citrus fruit producers, which is done by the Department of Agriculture. Our job as the DTIC is to support that department in its work, and we bring knowledge of trade law on the issue. I've covered the issue of the Nkomazi SEZ. By saying that we'd be happy to do a more detailed update on where we are with the different special economic zones. Now, Honorable Boshoff has raised the question around the 8 billion rand. Yes, of course, so on people with disability, we do have in our criteria, we do take that into account. But I should clarify both for Honorable Boshoff as well as for a question that was posed, I think it was by the chairperson, if I recall, on the monies. That's not a budget allocation as in we're going to give that sum to a separate fund for women. What it is we have the money that the DTIC has. We use the balance sheet of the IDC. So the IDC borrows money from the financial sector in South Africa, and it puts up as, if you like, as a guarantee of payment, its balance sheet. So we don't really get money from National Treasury. We have not had it since the start of the democracy. In fact, even decades before that, we expect the IDC to run a profitable business as a DFI, and the profit it makes on shares that it has in large companies, the dividends is then used to fund development. And so companies are able to apply for funding, and we then try to make sure that we have a number of applications from women, from young people, people with disabilities, and outside the metro areas and so. At the end of the day, those applications must still meet the fund criteria. And so we will be reporting regularly on how well we do in achieving the 8 billion rand target. So I hope I've also been able to explain that the money doesn't get channeled directly to a township, but it depends on the soundness of the business case that comes in from township entrepreneurs when they apply for funds. We are trying to strengthen the capacity of the agencies of the DTIC to help applicants to strengthen their business cases. On the 200 billion rand in pledges and how past pledges have assisted, well, let me give a few quick examples, Honorable Boshoff. If the Honorable Member watches Netflix, then I should say that the films that that comes through Netflix come via fiber optic cables. Those fiber optic cables link South Africa to other key parts of the world. One of the big investment announcements that was made by Google was to lay an undersea cable that connects West Africa, South Africa, and Portugal. And that undersea cable is one of the ways in which Netflix movies or Zoom meetings with people in other parts of the world take place. Let me take another example. Every time an honorable member gets into a Toyota Corolla Cross or a C-Class Mercedes or a Ford Ranger Bucky or an Isuzu Bucky, then those have been done through the investment pledges that have been made. Those investment pledges have resulted in these important projects being done. Every time we've had any member of parliament vaccinated for COVID-19, then if the J&J vaccine was used, then that would have come from a factory in South Africa that was a result of an investment pledge. Every time an honorable member goes to hospital for an operation and is placed under an anesthetic, that anesthetic is now produced in South Africa as a result of the announcements that were made in the pledges. Every time I use a phone to make a phone call, that phone call is routed through either MTN or Vodacom or one of the other companies' wires, and that would have come about. They would have upgraded those cell towers, I should say wireless, not wires, the cell towers, and all of that would have been upgraded as a result of announcements made at the investment conference. And I can go into food that has been produced as a result of that, or mining products, or in fact, steel products, a range of other products. So that's not plans. That is what has already happened and that we're already consuming. Turning to Honorable Dango's questions, there are very good questions. Honorable Dango's raised the issue around the EU and citrus, which was also raised by Honorable Lont. And I should make the point that the most favored nation principle applies to the treatment of countries, for example, on tariffs. Now, with sanitary and phytosanitary standards, in international trade law, you can apply those selectively where you have evidence of a problem, of a sanitary or phytosanitary problem, a plant health problem, an animal health problem. We've made the point publicly, and we've made the point to the EU that the European Union is misusing the sanitary and phytosanitary standards, that they're targeting South Africa in part because our exports have become so successful. We are now the second largest exporter of citrus fruit in the world, just behind Spain. And in our view, this is narrow protectionism of Spanish farmers. It's got nothing to do with the problems that the EU says it is. It's about protecting jobs in Europe. And so we're trying to work through this matter through a combination of having to deal with it via the World Trade Organization. But we also, because we have a relationship with the EU, we're going to first exhaust every means to see if we can persuade the EU to shift course before we have to go the final route. On the matter of AGOA and chicken dumping, the United States some years ago was able to get an agreement with South Africa that a certain quantity of poultry products are allowed into South Africa free of an anti-dumping duty. And that facility is only in place as long as AGOA is in place. So that was done to take into account the preferential access that South African products also have to the US market. We can look at encouraging the Department of Small Business Development to support NGOs and co-ops in accessing the American market. There's some very interesting examples of small and medium-sized companies that are benefiting from that trade. And it is true that it's not in South Africa's interest or Africa's interest for a new Cold War. We need to work with all parts of the world. We need to focus on jobs and economic development in South Africa. And so we sell products to China, we sell products to the United States, and both of those economic relationships are vital, and they are important for us. Honorable Matebula has asked a number of questions. I've tried to respond to some of those in the course of dealing with other matters. On Musina Makado and Fetahomo Tubatsi, I would suggest that because it's a more detailed reply, we could offer at the convenience of the Select Committee to give a deeper briefing, and I will ask the Department and the SEZ unit to be available for that. On the Department of Transport, this is a matter that provinces are responsible for, to deal with the infrastructure around industrial parks, and it would be very good that provincial authorities are also encouraged through the work of the Select Committee to address precisely the problem that has been raised by Honorable Matebula. Of course, the DTIC also tries to see where it can pressurize players to move quickly, but the budget allocation for many of those roads, from my understanding of it, goes to provinces, and so we need to unlock that more. On citrus fruit, I've indicated the important work of Delrad and how we help them. On the promotion of local brands, or encouraging community members to buy local brands, we sponsor, we are the government department that sponsors and supports the Proudly South African campaign. But in addition to that, when we had the Black Industrialist Conference In July last year, we had a whole section displaying South African fashion and South African brands on fake goods coming into the country or counterfeit goods coming into the country. We work with SARS. It's a legal responsibility that SARS have, but we've created hotline tip-offs and so on that the industry provides SARS with information, and periodically SARS seizes these goods and work with us on this issue. I think I've covered those five questions, and I can see that Honorable Boshoff says she has very little time to watch TV. But I must say then, Honorable Boshoff, even for Zoom meetings, if there are global Zoom meetings, perhaps with counterparts in the European Parliament, the same infrastructure will be used. So I'm sure you'll celebrate the outcome of these investment conferences with us. Honorable Hai, on the acting positions, we have reduced the number of programs. We have now scoped out those ones. So we want to work on filling some of the vacant posts. But we're also creating a fit-for-purpose DTIC that has a leaner, smaller structure, and that we utilize all the available staff in the areas that is outward looking, and that we progressively shift work to the new priorities that we've identified here. On the spending outside of metros, I've covered how that will happen. It depends on the applications, but we're giving an important signal to the market by saying we're going to spend outside these five metros. This number of jobs, that is Black Industrialists, that was our target. Have 1 billion or 10 billion or 20 billion rand over a five-year period. But that's an input. That's not an output. It may be the output of the branch, but it's an input, because we only support Black Industrialists because those companies produce, they employ people. And so we're shifting the focus here. And so those numbers have come about from the exercise we've done, the modeling exercise we've done of the Black Industrialists that we work with, how many jobs are in those, and how we can make sure that those job numbers don't drop, and indeed that we can increase them. On the exports, those are enormous sums of money, 300 billion rand to the rest of the continent, 700 billion rand to the rest of the world as total manufacturing exports. So those are not commitments by companies. That is, the DTIC must create an enabling environment that can help to drive South Africa's successful export efforts. On the shares for workers, do the workers pay? The answer, Honorable Hai, I know as chairperson, you'll be very happy to know. No, the workers don't pay. Does the department pay? I think you'll be even happier, Honorable Hai, to also know the department don't pay. So what we do is we create funding mechanisms using different kind of models. For example, PepsiCo donated the entire money directly to a workers' trust, and that workers' trust then is able to buy the shares. Companies like Heineken or Coca-Cola would structure a deal. It's called vendor funding, where the dividend flows that come from these funds, that comes to the funds, the profit on the shares is used, a portion of that profit goes directly to the workers, and a portion goes to pay off the loan that that has been made. On the question of energy, how will we implement the energy measures of the DTIC. Some of them are localization of, so for example, we've supported that more companies produce the components here in South Africa. But it's a good example of how we've addressed the energy issue, where the DTIC unblocked a big company that had an energy challenge where their generators packed up. We were able to step in and help to ensure that we are able to significantly mitigate the risk of those workers being laid off. Now, one of the honorable members asked the question, is an example of how we these investments create jobs. And last year, I had invited President Ramaphosa to visit a local factory in Kwadukuza. He had been invited also by the company, and I had encouraged the president to go. And in that massive facility that had come out of a commitment that that company had made previously, there were 4,000 workers just in that one facility producing the wire harnesses that go into cars in the production sites of different big automakers in the Eastern Cape, in KZN, and in Gauteng. On the matter of electric vehicles, yes, we are coordinating with the Department of Transport on illicit trade. I've covered that to say that we work closely with the South African Revenue Service, SARS, on it. GOA, I've covered that. On audits, the Auditor General will still, of course, continue to audit the work of the department, and we will work very closely with the Auditor General on cannabis. This is driven by the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform. But Deputy Minister Gina has also been asked to be responsible in the ministry to support the efforts of the Dalrad colleagues. And so DTIC is also bringing some support there. And it would be good to make sure that the message that Honorable Hai has given is conveyed both to Dalrad, and also that it's drawn to the attention of Deputy Minister on the solar panels and the tax incentives. An important part of what we do is to ensure that we can produce locally. Obviously, we don't produce on sufficient scale the kind of size that China has. So that results in local products in some areas being more expensive. And so we've got to, the way to bring the prices down is to scale up production, which means we need a very predictable renewable energy program so that companies can carefully plan their production. You can't have stop-start production. That's not a helpful way to bring down your costs. And there are, of course, also foreign direct investors, for example, in wind, and certainly one of the two solar panels, the PV panels, have a investor, a foreign investor, and one is a South African company. So I'd like to, Chairperson, conclude on that, and also appreciate the questions that were posed by the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I think there's one question that we referred to one of the directors with regard to the question of Honorable launch on some of the stuff that is stuck at one of the abas.
So, Chairperson, I had suggested, but I'm in your hands, that they can just reach out to Honorable Lont to get all
outside the platform.
Outside the platform, yes.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Maybe Honorable Minister, we're running out of time. Some of us are still in the villages. We have a hybrid session. We need to quickly drive to Parliament. For me, it's the first time this year that I'll be in the precinct of Parliament. I would therefore request if you can make a closing remarks, and then we close.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My closing remarks will be very brief, both because the NCOP members have other responsibilities, but also this has been an extensive and a very, very good session. We know, honourable members, that the approach that we've adopted is a new approach. We will look for your understanding as we learn some ways, some new ways as we implement this. We hope we will achieve a lot of the good things that in the annual performance plan. Where we make mistakes, we want to be able to own up to those mistakes and learn from them. Where we succeed, we'd like all of the members of parliament from all political parties to help celebrate that, because South Africa succeeds when any of us succeeds. So if the DTIC is able to achieve some things, it's one that all South Africans can celebrate. So thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to thank also the staff, the DG, and her team for the hard work that is put into implementation of the annual performance plan. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honourable Minister, and also thanks to the Deputy Minister who was here earlier, who made the also opening remarks. Thanks to the honourable members who have attended the meeting, and also we appreciate their participation. We thank the DG, the DDGs, staff of the committee, staff of parliament in general, and the media. I see there's a note that says some outstanding questions should be sent in writing. I thought that all the questions have been dealt with. But if not, the committee secretary can make those outstanding questions to the department, and then they will be responded to in writing. As I said, we are now rushing to Parliament for the plenary session that starts at 2. Thank you very much, everybody. The meeting is adjourned, and goodbye.